Hi, and welcome to another podcast from The Human Diver, where we are looking to apply counter-errorism techniques in diving. By that we mean human factors and non-technical skills. Our goal is to give you the knowledge and skills so that your dives are safer and more enjoyable. The podcast is a mixture of short podcasts based on the blogs we have and longer podcasts, which will be interviews or discussion topics. Show notes will be provided so you can dig deeper if you want. Ready to jump in? Providing access to stories is one thing. Getting people to recognize the value to them is another thing. Three examples of this come to mind. One diving, one relating to diving, and one which has nothing to do with diving. The latter two show how important it is to reflect on the situation, looking for similarities, not differences. Story one. This account was posted online and relates to a diver suffering a hyperoxic, oxygen toxicity event when they breathed 100% oxygen at their 21 meter stop, but didn't tox until they started their ascent shortly afterwards. Fortunately, the author of the account saw the tox from their deco stop above them, raced down, put the reg in the diver's mouth, and conducted a rescue including surface swim. The toxing diver's buddy didn't know what to do in terms of the rescue. Both of the divers had been offered an analyzer by the author of the account to analyze their gas prior to entering the water, but they declined. On analyzing the gas after the dive, it was 100% oxygen. The air top to bring it to 50% had not been added. The diver survived, but then gave up diving because of this near fatal event. Question: how often do divers trust the dive shop to get it right? Assumptions are normal human behavior, but if the false assumption could mean an unrecoverable or irreversible situation, like an oxygen toxicity event, then we need to validate the assumption. Be that gas analysis, stops on decompression, penetrating a wreck, getting separated on a dive, surfacing away from the boat, counting divers back onto a boat before leaving the site, or many more similar examples. Story 2. This next account relates to part of a two-day human factors in diving training course being delivered to a media company. This media company undertakes underwater media shoots. I showed them a case study which involved a media shoot and asked them to review the narrative and identify how it made sense for the decisions to happen in the way they did, and then how many parallels there were to their own diving operations. The first responses were highly critical. I hope that wasn't one of ours, which is fairly normal, to be fair. I then asked them to explore the event in more detail and pull out the error-producing conditions that led to the media diver in question bailing out due to a faulty rebreather on a chute which had been put together at the last minute, and then going diving the next day on a field-repaired unit. On reflection, despite distancing themselves from such an event because of the differences at the beginning of the exercise, they started to identify many similarities and realized that this was a good learning opportunity for them and their junior leaders, who they regularly deploy to remote locations with real and perceived time pressures to produce results. Question: when you review an incident, do you genuinely look for similarities concerning the conditions surrounding the event or differences? Similarities could be time pressures, peer pressure, lack of psychological safety, it will be all right, goal fixation, or lack of clarity of goals, rather than differences where we mentally say, I wouldn't do that because, or employ counterfactuals. That is, they should have, they could have, they failed to, or I would have. Look at the conditions, not the outcomes. Story 3. This final account is a summary from an article by Dan Heath on LinkedIn, where he describes trying to bring latrines to rural Indian villages where they normally defecate and urinate in the jungle or woods surrounding the village, but when the weather is poor or at night, they defecate and urinate in the village, leading to unhygienic situations. It wasn't until the villagers actually saw how much defecation happened in the village and the way feces are carried on flies' legs onto food and drinking water did they actually realize the benefit of having latrines to prevent the spread of disease and illness. As Andre and I have said in class, you have to hold the mirror in front of the students so they can see what is going on. Sometimes they need to be metaphorically hit with it too. The feedback from the two-day courses shows the power of this, with consistent messages like, this is the best and most useful course I have been on ever, because we encourage self-reflection. The students have the answers to their problems, we just help them find them. Question: how much evidence do you need to show that change is needed? What are the factors that are preventing change? I can't remember where, maybe it worked by Kahneman under prospect theory, but there was something I read that said we need to see 2.5 to 3.5 times the perceived benefit before we will even consider a change. That means even before we physically put something in place, we have to perceive that there is some value in doing so. In diving, bringing human factors, non-technical skills, psychological safety, and a just culture into the space is not easy for a number of reasons. Number one, safety or success is measured by the number of dead divers. Fortunately, this is a pretty low number. This is no different than many other domains. Safety is measured by its absence. Trying to make a small number even smaller and showing the relationship between human factors and improved numbers is nearly impossible. Number two, nothing has gone wrong in the past, therefore nothing will go wrong in the future. Why do I need to improve my performance? The status quo is good enough. Number three, the marketing of diving infers that diving is a relatively safe sport and is accessible for all. Statistically, diving, by the number of fatalities, is pretty safe. How many people have DCS, have scary incidents, have left the sport because things have gone wrong, who are anxious because of incomplete or ineffective training? Number four, I believe the underlying culture within the diving industry is based around compliance, completing courses to standard, and then we will remain safe. In reality, we have to be able to think outside the box, and that requires us to fail, reflect, learn, and improve. Compliance provides an illusion of safety. Number five, we don't always reflect on the activity. We don't consider whether we were lucky or whether we were good. Number six, we don't have a just culture that allows us to explore the context surrounding the events. Instead, we focus on the proximal causes which are known and easy to dismiss. And number seven, applying human factors requires mental energy to create the change, and it also takes time. It isn't the same as buying something shiny where we get an immediate rush of this is cool. Investing in our development is essential, and investing is the correct word. It is a continual application of knowledge and practice over time so that we can see and interact with the world differently. There's a great quote from Captain Chesley Sully Sullenberger, who was the pilot of US Airways Flight 1549 that successfully ditched in the River Hudson with zero loss of life. He said, "For 42 years, I've been making small regular deposits in this bank of experience, education, and training. On January 15th, the balance was sufficient so that I could make a very large withdrawal." Summary, change isn't easy. It isn't easy because it requires us to apply mental and physical energy against a level of uncertainty that the activity or action will improve things. We can't guarantee that the activity or action will make an improvement, and so we sit back and carry on with the status quo. Learning doesn't happen by doing something or making a mistake. It happens when we reflect on the activity and the outcome and wonder how it made sense to do that. If it was a good outcome, better than expected, can we identify the factors that led to that improvement? If it was a bad outcome, worse than expected, we can do the same. Reflect on the conditions that led to the event and then work out what we need to do to make an improvement. Just saying, "I won't do that again," is not enough. We have to put something in place, execute the change, then monitor the difference. If we just say, "That wasn't good, let's do something different," we have identified a lesson, we haven't learned it. To learn, we have to change. Thanks for listening to this podcast. If you'd like to know more about what was discussed in this episode, head over to the Human Diver website at thehumandiver.com, where you will find details about our education programs, the If Only documentary, the book Under Pressure, and the many, many blogs we have published there. If you think others should listen and learn, consider sharing the link. Thank you.